This is America Daily, bringing you the best in truthful news updates and in-depth reports happening now. This is America Daily. I'm Mark Jackson. Today, we continue our series on the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. In part one, we spoke to a mother who helped establish the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. In part two of this series, we spoke to a vaccine lawyer who won one of the largest settlements from the vaccine court so far. Today, in part three, we hear from a lawyer who is taking on Big Pharma. His current lawsuit aims to improve the safety of one adult vaccine. If he wins, it could also have a huge impact on childhood vaccine. Here's reporter Mei-Ling Li with more on this story.
Many people are still not aware of the vaccine court, even though it's been established for over 30 years by the U.S. government. We dive deeper in this episode to understand how the vaccine court really works. Mark Sedaka is the founder of Sedaka Associates, with offices in New York and New Jersey. He is an attorney focused on medical litigation and has handled over 175 vaccination cases since 2005. He's also the creator of the Vaccine Injury Help Center that informs the public about the risks of vaccine adverse reactions. Mark first explains the difference between making a personal injury claim and filing a lawsuit to help us better understand how the vaccine court works.
A claim is it's kind of like an insurance word where before you're able to file law, before if you were to get hurt by a car in a car accident, for example, and you wanted to file a lawsuit, sometimes the attorney that you contact would go and submit a claim to the insurance company before you even file a lawsuit. So the insurance company will go through the process of negotiating if they're interested in settling. They often do. And you can settle the case out before you even file a lawsuit. So that's a claim per se. In a court, when you go to court, you're instituting a lawsuit, which is a little bit different. So in the program, so just to back up a second, the program functions as a claims administration or a claims system, where the vaccine court, that is, functions as a claim system where you can go through this process and at the end decide whether or not to accept the outcome or to file a lawsuit. Whereas if you go into the and you go down to your local court and you got into a car accident, you file your lawsuit, and that's the end of the story. Unless you get to the end, you go to jury trial or it settles, and that's that. And there's no other process. So after that's over, you either appeal it or it's over. Whereas in the vaccine program, you go through the vaccine court and you have the option at the end to actually file a lawsuit against the vaccine manufacturer or the person who administered the vaccine, and then go on from there.
So only vaccines that are recommended for children are compensated through the program?
That's true. So that's correct. So what you're asking is kind of a legally complicated subject, but the reality is, if you receive, whether you're an adult or a child, if you receive a vaccine that's recommended for children, which includes the various tetanus vaccines, the various hepatitis vaccines, the various influenza vaccines, and the various MMR, MMRV, varicella, all those different vaccines that children receive at regular routine visits. If you receive one of those and you're injured, you have to first go through the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. Now, at the end of the program, you have a choice. You can either accept the judgment of the court, or you can opt out and file your own lawsuit.
But with Congress constantly amending the law to weaken the compensation mechanism and the safety of the vaccine provisions, it seems like filing a lawsuit against vaccine makers is becoming more difficult.
There was a Supreme Court decision that in regard to vaccine injury and the vaccine in cases that come out of the vaccine injury compensation program, which say that you are no longer able to sue a vaccine manufacturer for vaccines covered by the program based on a poor design. So a lot of these vaccines are of old design. They could be improved. They can be made safer. But our conservative Supreme Court has made a decision that says, tough noogies, the vaccine program is set up there to provide compensation. Therefore, injured citizens, you're not allowed to sue the vaccine manufacturer based on faulty design, that they could have designed it safer.
And just to clarify for our listeners, the Supreme Court decision that Mark was referring to was a 2011 Brucewitz versus Wyeth case, where the Supreme Court reaffirmed that vaccines were unavoidably unsafe, and therefore vaccine makers cannot be sued for faulty manufacturing. Now, with all the changes to the vaccine injury compensation program, are there incentives for vaccine manufacturers to make safer vaccines?
Absolutely not. For childhood vaccines, no incentive, zero whatsoever. None for childhood vaccines. And that is a major problem. The only way, having done drug litigation for my entire career, pharmaceutical drug litigation and medical device litigation, my entire career, I've seen so many dark things that these companies do, and they don't care. And I sound like maybe I'm a guy in the corner that screams, what crazy, it's the end of the world. But they don't care until they lose money. And the way that the program is set up now, there is no incentive for them to make improvements. Because you have to remember, an entity, a corporation like Merck, like GSK, like all these big corporations, Novartis, they're huge entities, living, breathing entities by themselves. They have a thought. They're not the CEO. The CEO, if you go and ask the CEO of any of these companies and say, hey, you want to hurt these people? You want to hurt like the average citizen? They'll say no, because they're human beings. They don't want to. But the entity itself, the corporation is a living entity that only operates as the people inside it directed to. So if you have an environment that's out of control or is profit driven only, that wants to increase profits, they're going to put safety on the bottom of the list. And so because of that, because these companies are profit driven, they don't have an incentive for vaccines that are covered by the program to improve. There's no incentive because they won't get sued, and they'll never lose profit based on liability or litigation. So the biggest profit motivator of improvement or a better design in all products, not just pharmaceuticals, is taken away when it comes to childhood vaccines. So there is no drive to innovate or to make things safer. It's gone.
How does the vaccine injury compensation program get funded?
I know that on every vaccine that's sold has something called an excise tax. That's E-X-C-I-S-E. So this tax is built into the cost of the product. So it's not extra. So like if you go down to, your local you know, Walmart and you buy something, you're charged a sales tax at the end. So you get, it's the price of something, which is like, let's say $10, plus you get charged a sales tax, which goes to the state. And in this case, when you buy a vaccine, built into the price is a small tax called an excise tax, which goes to fund the program. So every time someone buys something, either it's paid out of pocket by the person, or it's paid by insurance, this small excise tax, which is built into the price of the product, goes to a trust fund, which funds this program. Right now, I do know that trust fund is funded in the billions. There's enough in there to cover almost everybody who's vaccine injured up to now.
What are your thoughts about the lack of factual conversations about vaccine safety and vaccine injuries?
I have a kid. I just ran through the program. He received the hepatitis vaccine. It's a rare kind of case. He developed a condition called CIDP, which is chronic inflammatory. Well, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is that his nerves are falling apart, and it causes him great pain. And the kid was 9 years old when he developed it, and he ended up trying to kill himself at the age of 12 because he was in so much pain. And we just got him taken care of for the rest of his life through the program. But the bottom line is that that's a success story. But the bottom line, these injuries, the people who get injured by vaccines, the injuries are real. I mean, they're real. And they affect so many lives. It's unbelievable to deny. And this is the problem. And this is why people come up with conspiracy theories. The government's doing this and doing that or whatever. The problem is that these vaccine injuries are real. I see them. I have a ton of them. I live with them every day. But the government or the official voice of the medical community and the government is that they don't exist. And because you have that dichotomy, really, is that it creates a breeding ground for conspiracy theory. Oh, the government's trying to do this. Blah, blah, blah. If they just have an honest conversation and say, listen, it happens, it's rare, and they are rare, but it happens, they're rare, but we feel that the benefits outweigh the risks. That's an honest conversation you can have with somebody. But to pretend that these things don't exist, which is what they do, is outrageous. There has to be an in-between. It's gotten so bad. And it gets worse because they keep denying. It's like everybody's saying that there's like some grand conspiracy theory from like government is putting tracking devices into vaccines to that's at one end. And then to the other end where the vaccine injuries never happen. I never heard of it in my life. Those are two extreme points of view that are creating a lack of information and causing more injury than, I mean, if you can have an honest conversation with somebody, like, for example, listen, parents, new parents, I know it's your 1 year, it's the 1 year, it's your child is now 1 year old. And we're going to give him the MMR vaccine. Now, what I would like you to do is you have to understand that in some kids, it's rare that they'll develop a fever. But if it goes above 101 or 102, you should bring them to the hospital. And you should be on a lookout for any rashes that are on his legs or any spots on his body. Be on the lookout for that. And if you see it, go to the doctor immediately. Well, go to the ER. Don't wait. But instead of hearing that, they hear, oh, it's normal. Don't worry about it. Until their kid seizes out, has a seizure, and becomes permanently brain injured. Just have an honest conversation with the parents. It's just, it doesn't make sense.
In my research, I came across a Business Insider article about the vaccine court that was very misleading. For example, it stated that, quote, over 80% of the vaccine court cases settled without making any scientific conclusions about what caused the injury. Would you like to comment on that?
The reality is that there are certain conditions, that are well understood to be associated with vaccination that the government will try to settle. It's becoming less now, but they will try to settle without putting together an expert report or providing scientific evidence. The way you read that article, it implies that the cases are without merit, meaning that, oh, we're just going to give them a little money without an expert report, or we're going to give them a little money just because they made a claim. We'll give them $5,000, and they don't have to produce any kind of scientific credibility, or they don't have to make a credible claim. That's not true. That's not the message. The message is there's a 100% link between influenza vaccine and Guillain-Barré syndrome. I'm not going to make the petitioner go get an expert who's 100% going to link it anyway. I'm just going to settle the case. That's an important distinction from what you read, because the way you read it or the way it's written, it sounds like, we're just going to give them a little money and they're going to go away, and they don't have to give us a scientific basis. That's not true. That's not true at all. It's really that these cases are well accepted to be, these injuries are well known to be associated with the vaccinations. Therefore, we're going to settle them.
Can you talk about your current litigation case and its significance?
About the Zostavax litigation. So going back a second, I'm co-lead counsel in Zostavax. It's a vaccine that was given. Well, it's kind of off the market now, but it's still there. It's given to people ages 50 and over for the prevention of shingles. And what we've learned through the process and our allegations are that the vaccine actually causes shingles and some of the bad consequences of shingles, such as brain injuries and other neurological problems. So in that case, in comparing it to the claims court, in that case, we have it's centered in three places, in Philadelphia, New Jersey, and California. And in that case, we're actually suing Merck directly. So because it's a vaccine that's only for adults, we're allowed to sue Merck directly about it. And it's ongoing. We have our cases selected for trial, and we have a trial date for fall of next year. So that case is moving along quickly, and there could be good things that come out of this with regard to vaccine design and the development of different vaccines, because the virus that's contained in Zostavax is the exact same virus that's given to children in Varivax, which is the chickenpox vaccine. It's the exact same components. They just add more virus to the adult version. Meanwhile, the virus is the same. So we're hopeful that that the litigation can spur innovation and safer vaccine design when it comes to these live virus vaccines, which can often be very dangerous. For example, in the context of Zostavax and for shingles vaccine, GlaxoSmithKline, GSK, is another big pharmaceutical company. They developed a non-live virus version of the shingles vaccine, which has been shown to be more effective and safer than Zostavax. So in that case, we have GSK that came out and came out with a safer design. We're hopeful that the the litigation against those tobaccos will spur more innovation like that.
And Mark, what motivates you to keep doing this?
People. I love my clients. I like all my clients, and don't get me wrong, but the children. I can't talk about it, but I was someplace recently where I was representing a family of this little girl, and I won I was able to establish that she was entitled to compensation, and it made me cry. And helping the children makes it all worthwhile. And helping families, like I won the very first case linking Gardasil to death, and that experience was one of the best of my career. Now, could I have made more money as an attorney? Right, I could have made more money doing something else, anything, doing a simple car accident, taking a simple trip and fall at the local Piggly Wiggly. I could have made more money in that case, but the personal satisfaction of helping these families have some sort of sense of closure makes it all worthwhile. It's the only reason why I do this.
I hope you have enjoyed our series on the Vaccine Court and the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. This is Mei-Ling Lee with America Daily.
This is America Daily, bringing you the best in truthful news updates and in-depth reports happening now.